The wheel of time turns, and ages come and pass, leaving memories that become legend. Legend fades to myth, and even myth is long forgotten when the age that gave it birth comes again. In one age, called the Third Age by some, an age yet to come, an age long past, a married couple decided to start a podcast.
This is Shade of My Heart, a Wheel of Time podcast. I'm Josh, and this is my wife, Kat.
All right. We are ready to talk about season two.
Episode two, season one.
Episode two.
Close.
Of The Wheel of Time.
We stayed up late watching the first two episodes. So we're recording this first thing in the morning. So my wife is not quite as silver-tongued as she normally is. But let's talk about episode two. Starting off here, we get a really intense scene opening up of the White Cloaks. And Kat, what are they doing?
Yeah, there's a White Cloak that is eating a fancy dinner as he watches a yellow Aes Sedai be burned at the stake.
Yeah, so one big difference in this is that in the books, the White Cloaks, they'd love to kill all the Aes Sedai, but in reality, are they really a threat to the Aes Sedai?
No, they're really not. They're really just, I feel like the Aes Sedai could just, you know, scooch them away with their hands.
Yeah, and really the only thing that keeps them at all sort of a threat is the Aes Sedai oath, not to, use it as a weapon, unless, you know, it's the last defense. So we see them actually cut the hands off of this yellow sister, who we don't know who that is. We might know her name eventually. Why do you think they cut her hands off, Kat?
So in the books, they don't need their hands to weave the One Power, but it seems like in the show, which I think it's fine, it's a visual medium. So in the show, they're making it so they do need their hands, which would make sense as to why you would do that. And interestingly, he walks over to the hand and, you know, takes off the ring. So it's kind of a cool visual there when he puts it on his belt, showing how many Aes Sedai kills he has.
I couldn't really tell how many rings he had on that trophy belt, but the fact that he's got a number of trophies from different Aes Sedai really ups the ante for how threatening the White Cloaks really are.
Yeah.
And I don't really like their costumes. They have like these white tabards and then armor just on one arm.
Yeah.
Which I kind of thought was not great look, but I think other than that, the White Cloak portrayal was pretty good.
Yeah, I really liked how it made them much more of a threat than in the books.
Yeah. What did you think of the opening credits?
In the first episode, they didn't have that. Yeah.
In the first episode, they just kind of had Moiraine gearing up. But in the second episode, they had this really interesting opening credit
scene. It was like they were
weaving
a tapestry, which I absolutely love. I thought it was gorgeous. I really liked it. And they showed all the different Aes Sedai. It looked like it was almost in the Hall of the Tower for a sec. I really liked it. I thought it was beautiful.
Yeah, and we had talked about in a previous episode that there's kind of a theme of weaving in the Wheel of Time, not only with how they channel, but the pattern weaving. Mm-hmm. So I think you could understand the opening credits to be either the pattern weaving itself with the age lace, or, you know, the power being woven.
Yeah, I think that's the purpose. I thought it was really cool.
Yeah, definitely. There's a big difference with how they crossed the Tarn.
What'd you think of that? Yeah, I thought it was fine.
The Tarn's the river that they crossed, by the way.
Yeah, I thought it was fine. I understand that change. There's a lot of story in that part, but this condensed it down and just made it quicker and easier. And I think that's what we're seeing a lot of, is a lot of condensing, because reading the books, really getting through the first book is a little bit of, it's kind of hard.
The first few chapters is
a little bit hard to get through. So I'm seeing that they're really condensing a lot to get us through book one quicker, which I'm fine with it.
I understand why they're condensing and abbreviating parts. It makes sense.
Yeah.
But the ferry crossing, they end up Moraine kind of murders a guy, but it's really his own fault. She was going to just destroy the ferry so that the Trollocs and Fades couldn't follow them across the river. And he made the decision to go out and try to save it. That wasn't a good idea. There's no way his plan was a good idea.
Right.
Best case scenario, he gets butchered by the Fades and Trollocs.
Yeah.
There's no really good scenario there where
and
he
she
comes
does
out
destroy
with her.
That boat in the book too.
Yeah, but not him.
No, he doesn't jump in after it.
Yeah. But I think they did that to show, yeah, she's kind of a threat. She's not a pure good character that's harmless. She's good, but she's dangerous.
Yeah.
And she'll kill if it suits her ends. Which I think that was good writing. We got our first glimpse of the world of dreams. All the Emmonsfielders have this dream about a bat and this man with glowing red eyes. What did you think of that?
Yeah, I thought it was good. So again, another change from the book to condense things, when the dream happens and how it happens. I really liked that Moraine says, you know, that dreams are real and that dreams really have power. It sets that up really well that, you know, you just mentioned the world of dreams, which they don't mention in the show, but it sets up that something important can happen in their dreams and that it's not just a dream. They all have this dream about the bats, and I thought it was well done. It was gross.
It was super gross. Rand coughing up a bat.
Yeah, that was gross. Ugh,
disgusting. Yeah. Different than the dream that he has in the books in Barillon with right. the rat, because he actually talks to
right.
This individual.
That he sees that.
But he just sees him here. But I think that was good as a first introduction.
Mm-hmm.
They end up on the run, and Moraine is suffering badly, and she's unconscious as they're on the run from all the Shadow Spawn.
We've missed the White Cloaks.
Oh, yeah, they're interacting with
Moraine
and the White
Cloaks. The reason that they gave us the White Cloaks in the beginning.
Yeah. So we see, actually, Moraine is afraid of the White Cloaks.
She slips the ring off and hands it to Lan so he can hide it.
Yeah. And we see this White Cloak questioner getting, like, all up in her business, feeling her up and looking for a ring, I guess, is what he's doing.
I guess.
Very strange. That guy gives me the creeps.
Yeah, he gives Lan the creeps, too, and Moraine.
Yeah. I even get the sense that the other White Cloak commanders is creeped out by him.
Yeah, definitely.
Also, here's an interesting thing that they said. the White Cloak commander says, okay, we're going to go deal with these Shadow Spawn. And the questioner's like, yeah, we're going to go a different way. And he's like, no, but they're this way. And he's like, oh, our calling isn't to fight.
Yeah.
So that already gives you this sense that there's a division within the White Cloak ranks of those who are willing to fight Dark Friends and Shadow Spawn, and the questioners who really just like to torture people and try to root out Dark Friends, and they start torturing
before
they have assurance that this person actually is a Dark Friend, which of course calls into question, if you torture someone enough, will they confess to being
right.
a Dark Friend just to end it?
Yep. Okay, and so that brings us to something that we sort of skipped over. Well, we totally skipped over the three oaths. So Moraine and Egwene have this moment when they're on the run, and Moraine brings Egwene into like this wooded area and talks to her about how she can touch the truth, the one power. And they have this moment where Egwene actually does channel briefly, and Moraine talks to her about the three oaths that an Aes Sedai takes. So those three oaths are, Josh,
to speak no word that is not true, not to make a weapon for one man to kill another, and not to use the one power as a weapon, except in the last defense of her own life or that of her warder, or against Dark Friends and Shadow Spawn.
Yeah.
Those are the three oaths that they take on the oath rod. So it's not that they have to follow them. They cannot break them. the oath rod binds it to their bones. They cannot break those three oaths. And she, during that part, also she tests Egwene using that stone. And she finds out, oh, snap, she can learn to channel. And so Moraine is introducing this other path
right
for Egwene. Remember, and Egwene had wanted to be the wisdom.
But the wisdom got carried off.
She thinks she's dead.
She thinks she's dead.
They had that conversation where Perrin said the obvious, which is, yeah, if you get carried off, you're dead. That's it.
Yep.
So that was interesting, you know, that Egwene has lost that hope of being the wisdom, but now she's introduced to this new dream of being an Aes Sedai someday.
Yeah. And then they have this, that little tension between her and Rand, where he doesn't really know what to think and she's not sure what she's doing.
Yeah. She feels betrayed because he's not talking and they're not interacting as they used to. And he's like, you shut that down. What do you want me to do? I can't go back to the way it was. We can't just be like cuddle buddies and, you know,
right.
Act like we're still going to get married someday. You said that that's not what you want. So where are we?
Yeah.
But they end up on the run and they go into this giant city that's abandoned and creepy and threatening.
So this is where we were a minute ago. So
yeah.
Moraine is totally passed out. And Lan leads everybody. Oh, I love that when they approach the city. They're called Shadar Logoth. They approach the city.
They kind of said it weird they in the did. Show. They, how do they? I can't know. Even say
Shadar
it.
Shadar Logoth or something.
Yeah, different than
I've different been than what we're used to. It. But I love how they're like, the horses kind of stop, like, we don't want to go any further.
And all the Trollocs stop too.
Yeah. And Perrin's like, what's up with the Trollocs? Why are they just standing there? So, and Lan's like, yeah, I'm going to take you into the city that Trollocs are afraid to go in.
And,
and we have that wonderful line by Matt. They get into the city and Matt's like, so, couple of things. Why in the world did you bring us here? He's so funny.
Yeah,
I love Matt's character.
Matt's doing a great job of line delivery and being sarcastic. Even, you know, talking about Moraine, he's like, yeah, she's probably going to try to kill us. She wouldn't have a problem with that. But she does shoot fireballs, so let's keep on her good side, shall we? I love that line. Mm-hmm. That was great. Mm-hmm. Okay, so when they're in the city, though, Rand climbs up to a high place and he's kind of looking out over the city and Egwene comes and stands next to him and he reaches over and holds her hand.
Very sweet.
Which is a sweet moment for them. And it's kind of a reconciliation, I think, between the two of them.
Yeah, I really like that.
But the moment is broken. before that happens, Matt finds something.
Huge deal.
What do you think of the dagger that he finds?
It's gorgeous.
Yeah.
So he wakes up, he hears like a horse whinnying, and then he goes and finds the dagger buried under a bunch of rubble. And he gives Perrin this knife that Perrin's wife had made him.
Oh, yeah,
which was a really sweet moment between him and Perrin.
That was a sweet moment.
But that made it very interesting finding the dagger, because I feel like it's not as much. So we've already established that in this particular version, Matt's like a thief, that he kind of, you know, he's going to do what he has to survive kind of thing. So he's given away his knife, and then he finds this gorgeous dagger with a ruby in the hilt,
mm-hmm.
made out of like pure gold.
Yeah, so that's a big change from the books. In the books, they have this rather odd little episode where the three boys go treasure hunting. And they run into this guy who says he's a treasure hunter. And he brings them to this place with all this treasure. And then he turns out to be a ghost. And it's really scary and they run away. And I'm kind of glad they don't do that, actually. Because that is really weird.
It's very weird.
And it's out of character for the rest of mm-hmm. the city.
Because
mm-hmm. you don't have like a bunch of ghosts running around. You have this like nameless, faceless threat mm-hmm. of power called Mashadar. That just like eats people's souls. Again, different how it's portrayed in the books and in the show, but I'm here for it. But so while Matt's examining the dagger, and I'm glad that they actually did it this way, he's like checking it out, and then he hears the horses, and so he just kind of puts it in his cloak real quick and goes and check it out. That was interesting. What did you think of what Mashadar did to that poor horse?
Oh, it was so sad. Oh, and
awful.
But really good for the story. Like, it shows why Mashadar is super scary, because in the books it's like a mist, but we don't get any, it doesn't destroy anything in the books. It just reaches out and, you know that it shouldn't touch you. But this gave us a very good visual of why you should not let that stuff touch you.
Yeah, it's like this black, it's almost like a bunch of bugs or something, but it's like this black stuff, and it just like tore the horse down to bits.
Yeah, like to ash.
It's gross.
It was really gross.
And so that's what makes everyone split up. So you've got Perrin and Egwene, and they climb to the top of a wall. Classic horror movie mistake.
Like, why are you going
Don't
up?
Don't run up.
But this thing obviously climbs walls.
They get trapped on the top of the wall, and so they jump.
Yeah, I do not care for that part. I feel like that was very unrealistic. Like, yeah. You can't jump that far into water. This wall was enormous.
Yeah, it's at night. They can barely see.
They don't know how deep the water is.
They have no idea. I mean, it's not a good idea. They should be dead.
Yeah, but...
but they're not. I'm glad they're not dead.
It's a TV show.
So they're together. Matt and Rand are together. And
Moraine and Lan
are together. But then right at the end of the episode, as Lan is attending to Moraine and she's kind of, you know, coming to a little bit, he gets a blade to his throat.
Yeah.
And who's holding that blade?
Nynaeve.
Now, what do you think about that twist? Because obviously that's a big change.
I liked it because it's going to give us the reason that, well, I guess I don't want to spoil anything. I liked it. I thought it was a fine introduction of Nynaeve is still alive.
Not only alive, but quite capable. Because the last time we saw her, she was getting taken.
Right.
So the implication of that is that she got free herself.
Yep.
And then tracked them down.
Yep.
And snuck up on Lan.
Who you can't sneak up on.
So she has, in that, proven herself very capable.
Yeah.
Not a damsel in distress.
And she's like, I will kill you. Like, she has no fear.
Yeah, she wants to find the other Emmons Fielders.
Yep. I liked it a lot.
So we loved the second episode. Very different from the books. But we're here for it, and we're excited to see episode 3.
Yes, so stay tuned, and may you always find water and shade.